at this point, so we'll officially call the meeting. We will not call the meeting to order. We'll officially call to order when we have a quorum. But we will start out with House File 3334. Members, if you take that out of your pack, if we're going to start right away. So when we have a quorum, I will move House File 3334. And I see there are no amendments. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lehman, and please present your bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm pleased to be here today to talk about House File 3334. And this is a conversation that I've been having, others have been having, with the mining industry the last couple of years. You might recall that we provided CI tax break last year in the way of eliminating the first $100,000 of valuation for CI properties as regards their state tax. When things like that happen, the mining industry does not benefit because the mining industry doesn't pay taxes like other industries. And they pay a production tax and they pay an occupation tax. But at the same time, the industry has its ups and downs, as we all know. It's a cyclical industry. And in the past few years, excuse me, it has really seen a downturn. And it's a global industry, just like other natural resource industries, the paper industry and the mining industry. And so keeping it cost competitive is critical. We're all familiar with President Trump's recent move to try and impose some tariffs, and that's just an effort to keep the level playing field in the United States. Our mining industry really serves the U.S. market, and so if we can keep them competitive, we will have a healthy iron range in Minnesota for years to come. So here to present the bill with me today is Kelsey Johnson of the Iron Mining Association, and I'm going to let her talk about the details of the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Welcome to the committee. First of all, is there anyone else in the audience who would wish to testify on behalf of the bill? On behalf of the bill? Anyone with concerns? Would the department like to comment? Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Not thank you that you're not testifying, but thank you for being who you are. Okay, so with that, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Kelsey Johnson, and I'm president of the Iron Mining Association, and I'm here in support of House File 3334. Thank you for this opportunity.
Welcome to the committee.
The IMA represents six operating iron mining facilities, two idled facilities that span the Iron Range, and 175 members, vendor members that are located throughout Minnesota and North America. Combined, our industry supports 15,000 employees. Minnesota's iron mines contribute over 85% of the nation's domestic iron production. There's only one other state in the nation where iron mining occurs, and that's Michigan. Not only is iron mining's impact felt in northern Minnesota on a daily basis, but our industry plays a key role in the nation's economic health and vitality. According to a recent study, our industry supports nearly 11 million jobs nationwide and 16% of the nation's GDP. From 2014 to 2016, the iron mines experienced a significant downturn that idled facilities and caused thousands of temporary layoffs due to illegal steel dumping. This significant global price change left many facilities without the necessary capital to reinvest and keep up with the emerging global pressures. House File 3334 would provide the needed capital for future reinvestment in current facilities. The tax benefit would only be provided when facilities pay into the general fund and would be based on overall production. All other constitutionally dedicated distributions would be fulfilled before this rebate would be provided back to the facilities. Thank you again for this opportunity, and I can defer to my colleague.
Before you do that, any questions from members for Ms. Johnson? Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnson. If you want to stick around here, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Peter Coyle with Larkin Hoffman. I represent United States Steel.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here this morning, and I want to thank Representative Lehman for bringing this bill forward. Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to offer up a couple of points. United States Steel is a diverse, integrated steel manufacturer, but its base of operations starts in northern Minnesota with the taconite facilities that it operates, both Minntac and Keetac. They are, however, located in eight other states. The sad fact is the tax burden on U.S. Steel in Minnesota dwarfs by multiples the overall tax burden that they experience in other states in which they do business. And in these other states, they're operating massive steelmaking facilities. So, for example, in the past year, the all-in tax burden for U.S. Steel in Minnesota, including their including income tax on employees, to be clear, is $61 million. The highest next burden on a state for U.S. Steel is $42 million, and that's their facilities in Indiana. So the request today is to help U.S. Steel prioritize investment in Minnesota, notwithstanding a high tax exposure that they have. And the offer, the proposal by Representative Lehman, is a modest but very important and helpful step in that direction. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify this morning, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. Any questions for Mr. Coyle? Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Coyle, I was listening to the previous testifier, and she said the only mining in the U.S. is Michigan and Minnesota. And then I look at your plants, and where I'm headed for is what's the cost of transportation, because I assume if that's the only place there's mining, you've got Alabama. I can see where the Great Lakes, you know, with Gary, Indiana, and so on, where, you know, the shipping on the Great Lakes. But how competitive is a place like Fairfield, Alabama? Are they importing steel to operate down there, or is that shipped out of our iron mines in greater Minnesota?
Mr. Coyle?
Mr. Minnesota. Chairman and Representative, and Representative Metzer or Representative Lehman could jump in if they choose, but I can tell you that all of the taconite that is mined by U.S. Steel is used for their steelmaking operations around the country. And the cost of transportation is a huge component of that. And it's one of the challenges that U.S. Steel has in trying to be competitive on an international scale.
Mr. Chairman, I've got no problem with your shipping the ore wherever it's going. I find it rather interesting that what appears on the map to be a relatively isolated area. So I assume transportation costs would be a problem, and you're shaking your head yes. So that's all I was asking, Mr. Chairman.
Although it's worth noting that the very highest cost that they incur is energy costs. U.S. Steel is the largest energy consumer in the state of Minnesota.
Chair Carlson.
Well, that was answering my question.
Representative Mehta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lehman, for working on this with us. I know we briefly discussed this as a committee last year as an option and think that it's prudent to, treat companies equally, and we haven't been able to do that with some of the breaks that we gave in property taxes to other folks. And this is a fair way to do it that we have precedence of doing, I believe, back in 2002 during the last business pass-through. And just to Chair Carlson, touch on what you were saying, energy is one of our highest costs. Transportation is tough, too. When we had the tar sands, both in Canada and over in Dakotas, we had our ports essentially piling up with product and or not being able to move their product to the port because of the competitive nature of rail. And the oil folks were locking up a lot of those empty freight trains and filling them up so that we couldn't move the product around, and really need to get back to, you know, providing the resources here as a state to, I think, make rail more competitive, to your point, and get a little bit more competitive in terms of the amount of companies who are working and bringing those products around, so that we don't end up in a position where we're producing the ore that they need to make the steel and we can't get it to the port and out to the furnaces. And so, again, this is a good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing it today. And I'll keep posted as we have other questions on this and see if I need to jump in again.
Thank you, Representative Metz. We do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. And we will have Representative Schultz be so kind as to move the minutes of Wednesday, March 7th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, we are now. I will move House File 3334, the Lehman bill that we've just been hearing. Are there any other questions? We'll have the author then wrap it up here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. This is a your reception is welcomed, and as Representative Metza said, this is kind of bringing the taconite companies on par with other breaks that we've given to other industries and recognizing their importance to Minnesota. It's probably transportation, energy, and taxes are probably three of the areas that we can try and control and be competitive. So thank you very much. And I appreciate your entertaining the moving of House File 3334.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. I will move House File number 3334 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next. We are very fortunate today to have with us Representative Freiberg.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Carl.
There's three bills in the packets, and it looks to me like the agenda shows two. Am I wrong on that?
I just had two. Members? Two?
Yep, just two.
Oh, we can hear another one.
Sorry, I'm one of them.
No, it's...
What's the other one that you have?
Well, if we just have two, I'll just pull the Freiberg bill. But
no, that we are on the Freiberg bill now.
Yeah, no, I know that. I see that. And then the other one I had was, I guess Lehman was the one. Okay. I've got it. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carl. Okay, item next, I will move House File 2790. And I have listed testifier Ellie Beaver and Gene Nichols. Is there anyone else wishes to testify on behalf of the bill? Anyone with concerns? Would the department like to testify on this bill? Absolutely. Okay, so I'll move House File 2790. But before we start on this bill, I would like to thank House Research, Mr. Michael, Mr. Williams, for their presentation yesterday in Ways and Means. Those of you that are on the Ways and Means Committee, I think if you weren't thoroughly confused by their presentation, you weren't paying attention. They did a wonderful job on a very, very complex subject that this committee will be working through, and I thank Chair Knobloch for hearing the presentation from Nonpartisan House Research. Chair Knobloch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, would like to second my thanks to them. They really did a great job, and I really felt that, you know, with the importance of this issue for this session, it was something that needed to be heard as an overview in Ways and Means, as well as the many hearings we've had in this committee. And I appreciate them coming and presenting. They did a great job.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch. Okay, I guess we do have an amendment. Members, do you have the H2790A1 amendment?
We do.
Okay. I will move the is this an author's amendment?
Yes.
Okay. I will move the H2790A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Chair Erickson. Passes. Okay, now we have the bill as amended. A two-year bill, Representative Freiberg. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate your willingness to hear this important bill. You know, when you're talking about tobacco control issues, it's often commonplace to have a large number of students and health professionals testifying as to the effects of the bill. I wanted to respect committee members' time, so I only have two people with me testifying on the bill, although I understand there are some other people, including the department, who wish to speak for or possibly against it as well. So despite... great progress. Smoking is still the number one cause of preventable death in our state. And the purpose of the bill is to take on this public health problem with a 1-2 punch. Now, it's been proven that higher tobacco prices reduce smoking rates. And research shows that dedicating funding to tobacco cessation and prevention will help lower smoking rates. And this bill does both. In short, what it does is reinstate the cuts that were made to tobacco prices in last year's tax bill, dedicates new revenue in the first year to tobacco cessation and prevention, with subsequent increases going to the general fund. Just more specifically, the bill reinstates the annual cigarette tax increase to keep pace with inflation, which is important to deter youth from smoking in the future. It restores the tax on premium cigars from 50 cents to a maximum of $3.50. Cigars are just as deadly and dangerous as cigarettes. They have higher levels of carcinogens than cigarettes. Research shows that higher tobacco prices help people quit, prevent youth smoking, and save lives. So the bill will dedicate funding to tobacco cessation and prevention. Last year, Minnesota collected $840 million in tobacco taxes and tobacco settlement fees. Less than 1% of this was spent on prevention and cessation. The CDC has strong recommendations for the amounts that states should spend on tobacco prevention and cessation. We are nowhere close to that. This bill would help make a step in the right direction. If we're serious about controlling health care costs, we should use proven methods to help people quit and prevent people from starting in the first place. This bill does both. I know Ellie Beaver is sitting next to me, so be happy to turn it over. I do have a couple handouts if committee staff would like to take those and distribute.
Yes, let's get the handouts out to every member here. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. With that, members, also in your packet, I notice there's a letter dated March 8th from the Retailers, Petroleum Marketers, Chamber, National Association of Tobacco Outlets. If you look in the lower left there, this letter is sponsored also by NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Got to be the Russians. So with that, we're very, very fortunate today to have with us Ellie Beaver from the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and present your testimony.
Thank you, Chair David. I'm Ellie Beaver, the Minnesota Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you. The American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network is a nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. We advocate for public policies that reduce death and suffering from cancer, including policies targeted at improving the health of our state by reducing tobacco use. We enthusiastically support Representative Freiberg's bill, which would dedicate $14 million per year in state funding to tobacco control programs, including programs to prevent kids from starting to use tobacco and to help people quit. We are also a member of the Minnesotans for Smoke-Free Generation Coalition, a coalition of over 50 Minnesota's leading health and other interested organizations that share a common goal of saving Minnesota youth from a lifetime of addiction to tobacco. Other members include the American Lung Association, the Minnesota Medical Association, the Mayo Clinic, and the American Heart Association. Tobacco use remains the largest preventable cause of disease and premature death in the United States. According to the U.S. Surgeon General, smoking is known to cause 12 types of cancer, including lung, stomach, liver, pancreas, kidney, cervix, bladder, colon, and acute myeloid leukemia. In fact, smoking is responsible for over a quarter of deaths in Minnesota, which means over 2,500 people will die from cancer caused by tobacco this year alone. About 80% of lung cancer deaths are related to tobacco use, and lung cancer is the number one cause of cancer death in Minnesota. Additionally, smokeless tobacco has been identified as a source of nicotine addiction and can cause cancer of the mouth, esophagus, and pancreas. The Center for Prevention of Blue Cross and Blue Shield estimates that Minnesota spends over $3 billion in excess health care costs because of tobacco use. Preventing tobacco use and helping people quit is key to driving down cancer rates in our state, which saves lives and money. As Representative Freiberg said, last year the state collected more than $840 million in tobacco taxes and settlement fees that went into the general fund, and less than 1% was spent on tobacco prevention and cessation efforts. Dedicating just a fraction of the tobacco funds to keep kids from starting to use tobacco and to help Minnesotans who smoke quit is a common sense move. Tobacco cessation and prevention programs serve to address broader issues caused by tobacco-related health and social costs by protecting the state's most vulnerable residents from the ravages of tobacco use, optimizing population health, and minimizing preventable health care expenses, thereby laying the foundations for a healthy and productive workforce. The legislature needs to act now because Quit Plan services, free tobacco cessation services currently available to all Minnesotans, will end in early 2020. People depend on cessation services to help them stop smoking because nicotine is such an addictive substance. Over two-thirds of current people who smoke say they want to quit using tobacco. These are people who need our help, and they would benefit from this legislation. Their lives are depending on it. ACSCAN has staff and advocates working to ensure funding for prevention and cessation in every state in the country. The 2014 Surgeon General's report determined states that have made larger investments in comprehensive tobacco control programs have seen larger declines in cigarette sales than the nation as a whole, and the prevalence of smoking among adults and youth has declined faster as spending for tobacco control programs has increased. Providing tobacco cessation services without barriers and accessible by all people is a critical component of all state tobacco control programs. But quit smoking services are not enough. We need to stop the start. That's why we absolutely support the dual purpose of this bill, cessation and prevention. Finally, I'd like to point out that ACS Canada would not normally support a bill like this if all it did was raise the price of tobacco by a few cents a pack. The benefit from such a small increase on its own is likely negligible. But because this is restoring the tobacco tax cuts from last session and dedicating that new revenue to prevention and cessation, we support it because prevention and cessation services are so crucial to ensuring fewer Minnesotans smoke and therefore fewer Minnesotans are diagnosed with cancer. I encourage your support for this bill. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Beaver? I have a question for you, and you can do some research. Who or what was the first city in the United States, and who was the mayor that banned cigarette machines?
I don't know that.
1987. You can first city to ban cigarette machines.
I'm going to take a wild stab and say Preston.
How'd you know that?
Yeah.
He's good. Preston, Minnesota. I think it was 87 or 88. We banned the cigarette machines in the city of Preston. Okay. Now let's go. Any questions for Ms. Beaver?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Anderson.
Did you have any cigarette machines in Preston?
No, so they're easy to ban. No, there's one at the Branding Iron and one at the pizza place. And it's kind of interesting how that happened because I was mayor and the parents would keep coming to the council saying, my kid's buying cigarettes, you know, buying cigarettes at the cigarette machine. You got to stop them. Well, just tell your kids not to buy them there, okay? And I'm very sensitive, as you know. And so finally, after about the 10th meeting, I just said, why don't we just ban the darn things? And so there's a motion from the floor. All in favor say aye. We banned cigarette machines in Preston. 1987 or 88, I think it was. So there's two of them. There's two of them. Yeah, they're not there anymore. Although I was in Germany in August, and I took pictures of it. I can show you. Tons of cigarette machines out on the street. You notice that in Germany? Tons of them. I thought, that's really odd. But they okay, let's go. If there's no questions for Ms. Beaver, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really enjoyed that story. And I have to say, if we pass this, you can claim 3 decades of fighting youth tobacco use in Minnesota, which I think would add tremendously to your legacy.
That would be something. Thank you. Chair Drazdowski.
Mr. Chairman, interesting story, but just a question. How many hearings did you have for that banning of individual rights in Preston?
We took away rights with no hearings whatsoever. Yes, we did. I'm sure I violated some amendment to the Constitution, but whatever. Okay, so let's go to Gene Nichols. Mr. Gene Nichols, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir. And then, members, we did pick up 2 folks that wish to testify with concerns, a Mark Wolk and a Rick Baker. So we will give them time, and then we'll go to the department. Mr. Nichols, sir.
Gene Nichols, American Heart Association.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Committee members. I'm Gene Nichols, a volunteer with the American Heart Association and the chair of the Heart Association's Advocacy Committee. Retirement keeps me busy, as I also serve as the board chair of the Open Cities Health Center, a federally qualified health center here in St. Paul, and I work for the African American Leadership Forum. All of my organizations are members of the Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Minnesota Coalition. Last year, I lost my brother to COPD. Like the vast majority of African-American smokers, he smoked menthols. I know I'm not alone in losing a loved one to commercial tobacco addiction. Every year, more than 6,300,000 Minnesotans die each year from tobacco use. Today, 580,000 Minnesotan adults still smoke, and majority want to quit. Let's help them. Now more than ever, I'm committed to preventing young people from smoking and helping smokers quit. The American Heart Association's mission is to improve the cardiovascular health of all Americans by 20% while reducing deaths by coronary heart disease and stroke by 20% by 2020. Like ACS can, we can't do this alone. Tobacco cessation services are proven to save lives and money. Helping people quit smoking is one of the most cost-effective health services. For every dollar Minnesota invests in counseling and nicotine replacement therapy, $1.29 would be saved annually. Quitline counseling and medication support can more than triple the chances of a person successfully quitting. Cessation and high tobacco prices work hand in hand to help users quit and prevent new ones from starting. And we need to worry about this more than ever. For the first time in 17 years, youth tobacco use in Minnesota is up. E-cigarettes and other youth marketing products are attracting kids and disrupting our steady downward trend. And we need to take notice. Cigarette smoking continues to go down, but the landscape is changing. We can't afford to backslide when it comes to kids and tobacco. Thank you. We would like to thank Representative Freiberg and his colleagues for putting forward this smart bill that is based on science and best practices according to the CDC.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nichols. Questions for Mr. Nichols? Thank you, sir. I'd like to bring up, if I could, then, Mark Wolk. And Mr. Rick Baker. And thank you, Ellie Beaver, Gene Nichols, for your testimony. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chairman David.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Mark Wolk, and I'm from Stogies on Grand in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir. First of all, I'd like to thank all of you that helped balance the landscape of premium cigars last session. We have seen a huge increase in our volume since you reduced the tax by $3 a cigar. I implore you not to repeal this tax and drive small businesses out of Minnesota. We continue to try to emphasize that we are not part of the cigarette, hookah, and vape world. We have never, nor will we ever promote or advertise to underage kids. In fact, they are not even allowed in our stores. I hope that you will take the time and realize that most of the health risks that the opponents will bring have brought up today are associated with cigarettes and not premium cigars. Please remember that we are not big tobacco companies. We are small businesses that had to take on the burden of those huge tax bills every month. Just like other industries, we have employees that rely on us for their income. That tax made it very difficult to hire new employees and to expand our inventories. I've been part of the Grand Avenue businesses community for over 20 years. We bring thousands of shoppers every year to the Avenue. If we go back to the old tax, we are going to be driving the tax dollars out of the state and to the Internet. The tax has not changed smoking habits, as our opponents are leading you to believe. It just changes their shopping habits. Why would a person choose to buy a box at a local shop if they can buy it for $100 cheaper online and $60 cheaper in our neighboring states? Premium cigars are legal, so why would you try and tax it like it is not legal? I am sure that you are not deciding to dictate people's behavior through raising taxes to get them to stop. I think we can all name five things that could be on that list if that is what we are proposing to do. In the future, we would like to forge relationships with Clearway and other organizations that try and prevent underage kids from having access to tobacco. This may seem odd to you, but we are the frontline soldiers in this fight, and we could really help each other in this fight. We have all heard the ads about flavored tobacco enticing kids to start smoking. That, again, is Swisher Sweets and others items that are sold in convenience stores. If you haven't noticed throughout the years, when we refer to our industry, we always use the words premium cigars. There is a reason for this, that they are not premium cigars, and you would not find these items in our stores. Thank you again for your support of small businesses in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Wolk. I think we'll go to Mr. Baker, then we'll open up for questions from members. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Davids. My name is Rick Baker, and I'm here on behalf of Tobacco Grove up in Maple Grove, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. I just would like to start off by saying that I run a retail store called Tobacco Grove that specializes in premium cigars. I want to take this moment to personally thank the House for passing the premium cigar tax reduction last year. That bill was a victory for small businesses in Minnesota. The new reasonable tax of 50 cents per cigar has allowed our store to be in line with our neighboring state's pricing, as well as being much more competitive with online stores. Most importantly, it's allowed our store of almost 20 years in business to continue to keep its doors open. Like the other premium cigar stores that you've heard from this year and last, we are 100% committed to the prevention of youth smoking. We not only follow state and local laws, but also follow the FDA's rule regarding IDing customers under the age of 27. Signs regarding these laws are posted in our front door and throughout the rest of our store. Let me be clear. No one under the age of 18 is permitted inside our store unless accompanied by a parent or guardian. We are subject to random compliance checks by the city of Maple Grove, which we consistently pass. We're a unique store, like others that you've heard from, and not to be confused at all with convenience stores, gas stations, head shops, hookah bars, and cigarette outlets. In fact, Tobacco Grove does not even sell cigarettes. We are specifically talking about premium cigars. We're your local neighborhood businesses whose existence depends on reasonable taxation as the current law supports. In closing, I just want to again thank you so much for supporting the sensible taxation that you passed last year, and thank you for supporting Minnesota's small businesses.
Thank you, sir. Questions from members? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering if both of our witnesses, since we have a real-life experience here, can tell us when the state reduced the cost to you of each cigar by $3, what did your price difference change? And because it was argued that this was going to benefit totally the customer and the competition, and yet you've mentioned other costs, what was the real impact?
Mr. Wolk.
At Stogies on Grand, we passed the whole $3 savings on to the customer. And we consistently saw every month people talking about that they want to support local businesses. And that was the biggest thing, was that we could now be competitive with our neighboring states. But we've had some, our store passed the whole $3 savings on to the customer.
As did ours as
Baker.
Well. Yes, ours did as well. We passed it on, which is what the majority of the premium cigar shops here in Minnesota did, was pass it on to the consumer. That was the whole point, was to be able to regain the business that was being lost to our neighboring states, and more specifically also to online sales. One note is that we were seeing customers coming back that we hadn't seen in over 5 years. And these customers had not stopped smoking, as they all let us know. They were all, in fact, actually just said, well, you guys are a little bit closer to what I'm spending for this box online, so I'd rather support, as Mr. Wolk said, a small business here in Minnesota and have my dollars stay in Minnesota.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's good to know. You're kind of a niche business, as you clearly described. I think most people buy their products in convenience stores and the other things that you notified. I don't think there's that many unique businesses like yours throughout the state of Minnesota. And last year we did something in the tax committee that I don't think I've ever seen before, which is we redefined a product. We redefined premium cigars to not be just those that are hand-rolled, but instead allowed machine-made cigars. We much broadened the market of marketing premium cigars, and I suspect your competitors have taken advantage of that and now claim that they are marketing premium cigars, and the reason you want to use premium is because that makes the customer feel special, like it's a special splurge. And I have talked to youth, and they do see that as something that really entices kids to want to step up and be like those, you know, celebrity images that they see. And so I appreciate the fact that you're sharing your business experiences. I think we still need to think about members. The vast majority of places where people buy their tobacco products, and more importantly, I think we need to talk about the health impacts and the health costs. And I have seen many people around this table fret about the growth in the health and human services budget. And this is a huge driver of it. We heard the statistics from the Cancer Society. And if you want the health and human services budget and our health care costs to go down, passing this kind of legislation is one of our best approaches to that. And more importantly, more and more of our constituents will have longer and healthier lives because we have over 500,000 people addicted to this right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loffa. Any other questions for Mr. Wolk or Mr. Baker? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Now we're very fortunate to have with us Mr. Cummings from the department who would like to comment on this bill as amended. And while Mr. Cummings is coming up, tomorrow, you can see the agenda for tomorrow, 3569, 3464, 3410, 3411, otherwise known as Greg Davis Day at the Capitol, or as Mr. Rubis would say, like any other day. Okay, so with that being said, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Some fine pieces of legislation there, Mr. Chair.
Fine pieces. Nice.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I am the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I was able to talk to Representative Freiberg before the hearing. And Mr. Chair, I did notice I was gone one day from tax committee, and there were donuts, and there were massages, and there was... whole bunch of other stuff. It just reminds me that I shouldn't miss tax committee.
You need to stick around, Mr. Cummings. We missed you, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In 2007, the legislature, over the objections of Governor Dayton, repealed the inflator on the moist snuff and cigarette taxes and reduced the maximum tax on premium cigars from $3.50 per cigar to 50 cents per cigar. The purpose of the 2013 enactment of the cigarette tax increase inflator was to make strategic investments in health care, education, and jobs, and to reduce smoking in Minnesota, particularly among its youth. Each year, more than 6,300 Minnesotans die from smoking-related illnesses, and smoking costs Minnesotans more than $3 billion in excess health care costs. Since Governor Dayton signed the law, the tobacco law increases in 2013, smoking has declined, most notably among high school students. In fact, the smoking rate among 11th grade students in Minnesota has declined by one-third. During the same time period, the adult smoking rate in Minnesota has declined by 10%. Tobacco kills more Minnesotans than alcohol, homicides, car accidents, AIDS, illegal drugs, and suicide combined. According to a study led by the Minnesota Department of Health, 63% of Minnesota smokers who quit last year said that high prices influenced their smoking behaviors. The elimination of the inflator on these taxes made cigarettes and moist snuff more affordable for our youth, who are the most price-sensitive years down the road. Removal of the inflator lowers the cost of cigarettes and snuff over time in real dollars. Especially galling is the tax break for premium cigars. If I could, Mr. Chair, lift up the voices of some in our community on this piece of legislation. Ms. Megan McFarling of Mounds View High School students said, the majority of her friends, 15, 16, and 17 years old, I would guess about half of them use tobacco products. This past year, the legislature decided to make cigars cheaper. Well, I've seen from other kids how smokers start with cheap tobacco products because you can afford them. And yes, Mr. Chair, last year's tax bill made tobacco cheaper in real dollars. Here is another note that the governor received on this topic. Mr. Trey L. Godfrey, a St. Paul student, said, cigars appeal a lot to young men who are like me. They make guys feel important, like they're rich and powerful. And once you try it, you're hooked. At the Capitol, when they agreed to cut the price of cigars, I don't know what they were thinking. He went on to say some other things, Mr. Chair, that I will retract for the sake of this committee. But he did say that I'm glad the governor noticed and is trying to make other people notice as well. And finally, Mr. Chair, Ms. Ann Deschler, a volunteer with the American Cancer Society, said, I've learned many lessons through my experience as an oncology nurse and the caregiver of family members who faced a cancer diagnosis. One in particular stands out. The tobacco industry doesn't care about the health of Minnesotans. It only cares about its profits. We have to do everything we can to protect our youth, and one of the best ways to do that is keep tobacco taxes in place. Mr. Chair, I think it would be fair to say that we are supportive of the tax provisions in this bill. We thank you for the opportunity to testify, and if this bill moves through the process, we look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Freiberg and staff.
And I'm so excited that you're supporting the bill in tax committee. So kind. Questions for members of the department? Mr. Cummings. Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cummins, the data that you referred to, how was that collected from students?
Mr. Cummings?
These are messages that the governor has received related to the tobacco provisions within the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Cummins, you cited a data that was collected from students and cited the number of increases or decreases, and then later on you gave a reason because it was based on the price. Where did that data come from?
Mr. Cummings?
I know that there have been studies that have been done by the Minnesota Department of Health. There are other studies that have been done by Clearway. I can get you the specific study, Representative Erickson, if that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Chair, and I have another question. Mr. Cummins, are cigarettes the only product on which there's an automatic adjustment, an inflator? Are they the only product? Do we do that to alcohol or anything else?
Mr. Chair, there is not an automatic inflator for alcohol. Maybe Mr. Michael can point to other places in statute in which there are inflator provisions or not inflator provisions. One of the things to note is that, as you know, there are various ways in which, as the price of a product increases, the amount of revenue collection increases as well. But in this case, for this tax, there wouldn't be that type of effect because it is per pack.
Mr. Michael, is there any other areas that there's inflators?
Mr. Chair, I mean a product like a cigarette or alcohol or something that has an excise tax on it. Do we have an automatic inflator any other place?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, there are none of the other excise taxes that are per unit excise taxes have inflation adjustments in the rate. It is worth noting, though, that a substantial part of the special tax that applies to alcohol, which is the gross receipts tax, is a tax that's based on the receipts that are received by businesses for selling alcohol. And so as prices increase, that special tax automatically goes up with the increases in price. So even though there's no indexing, in effect, the structure of that tax does increase as prices increase.
Thank you, Chair Erickson.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Cummins, do we know that when we had the inflator in place, did those dollars flow to education? Because you mentioned that education, and I know maybe you were referring to the Heart Association or cancer research, but, you know, you mentioned education rather broadly. We should be taking a percentage then of that and sending it to education, right, Representative Bloom? That's a rhetorical question. Mr. Cummings?
I'm glad it was. Any comments, Mr. Cummings?
Well, absolutely, Mr. Chair. This was part of the package in 2013 that helped balance the budget. And so in addition to making strategic investments like all-day K, it saved our schools from having to take deep cuts because of the deficit that had been created and perpetuated. It allowed Minnesotans to continue to have a safety net for the types of programs like MinnesotaCare and other types of programs. And so without the revenue that came from this, many of those programs that were able to be funded in 2013 and continue to be funded through that tax increase may not be available or may be swung. So absolutely part of this money, well, obviously it was in the tax bill. Part of the money used from this tax increase was used to pay for marginal increases within the education budget, as well as strategic investments like all-day K and increased funding for things like pre-K.
Chair Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I
I think, you know, if this ever is a part of our legislative statutory language in the future, that specifically there be a percentage that goes to education, not just dumped in the general fund, but if education is a big issue here, then it should be earmarked, and that's what I would like to see, although I don't support the inflator, so I hope it doesn't ever come back.
Questions for Mr. Cummings with the department? Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess, Representative Erickson, if you're concerned about funding for education, I would point out that Representative Lehman's bill takes over $2 million out of K-12 funding and $10 million out of higher education funding. So I hope the concerns are beyond just Representative Freiberg's bill. My question to Mr. Cummings, the other way of looking at this bill is how large a subsidy do we provide the tobacco industry and smokers? Because former Governor Pawlenty, and this is where I'm a Pawlenty Republican.
Sure.
Okay, maybe not quite, but...
Have you been endorsed yet, Jared Evans?
Oh, thank you. You just saved me. This okay. This isn't on, is it?
No.
We're not recording? Good.
What's not in this room stays in this room.
Okay, good to know.
Yes.
Governor Pawlenty moved on tobacco taxes because of the cost to the state of the use of tobacco. And so the question becomes, do we try to hold those costs inside that industry, or do the rest of us who don't smoke subsidize the businesses and the smokers? Do you know how much the state spends on responding to the health impacts of tobacco annually? I know this is outside revenues sphere of work, but do you have that information?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, the information that I have is that Minnesotans smoking costs Minnesotans more than $3 billion in excess health care costs. The increase in this certainly did not cover that.
Mm-hmm.
It goes partially the way to try and cover some more additional costs. The costs that come from smoking are costs that have continued to be paid for, whether through its through private health insurance or through public programs. And so the tax increase in 2013 was a partial way to say how can we increase the sort of ability for these type of costs to be covered, mm-hmm. even though it fully didn't cover those costs.
To that point, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just add to that the intention of the bill is not to subsidize the cost of the full $3 billion in excess health care costs that the tobacco industry and tobacco addiction costs the state, but to fund more upstream prevention and cessation measures that will help bring down the costs at a much more dramatic rate.
Thank you. Chair Dabney, you still have
the floor? I think I made my point. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cummings, could you break down for the committee a little bit how this proposed tax increase would break down among income brackets? How it would affect Minnesotans kind of by income brackets? Would one income bracket kind of be affected more than another?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, tobacco taxes, particularly cigarette taxes, are regressive taxes. So they hit... low-income people more than they hit higher-income people. It takes. We also see that a larger percentage of people's income at lower brackets are impacted by cigarette taxes. I'd also say, Mr. Chair and Representative Christensen, that the impacts of the tobacco taxes are also regressive. And so, I'm sorry, tobacco usage is also regressive. So what we're seeing is that many lower-income people are having to deal with the effects of smoking in this state. And so, and I think we talked about many of the ways in which we've actually seen usage go down. And so hopefully this is a way to try and counteract some of the regressive impacts of tobacco in this state.
Representative Freiberg, to the Christensen question.
Yeah, Mr. Cummings addressed what I was going to say pretty well. I was just going to mentioned that the death and disease caused by commercial tobacco products is regressive itself, and people of low socioeconomic status are more dramatically and adversely impacted by the negative health impacts of tobacco, and higher prices for tobacco products leads to a spike in cessation attempts and reduces the smoking rate, and it helps ultimately reduce the death and disease caused by tobacco products that is regressive in nature.
Thank you, Mr. Freiberg. Mr. Cummings? Any other questions for members? Chair Drazkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Cummings and Representative Freiberg, I mean, so the tax is focused mostly on poor people, and the impacts of tobacco affect poor people maybe proportionally the same as what you're kind of communicating. So is the motivation here to we're going to tax them so we can save them from themselves? Is that what we're doing here? Or what? What's the thinking?
Mr. Representative Freiberg?
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski, Representative and Chair Davids. I would argue we're not attempting to save them from themselves. We're attempting to save them from the tobacco industry, which for decades has manufactured tobacco products to be more addictive and to hook people primarily of low income and other disadvantaged groups. So, you know, when there's been a product, you know, this is unlike any other product, consumer product, a publicly available consumer product. When you use it as intended, it leads to death and disease. It kills people when you use it the way it's designed to be used. So the intent here is, like I said, there's reams of data. I can supply that to members if they're interested, that shows that the higher tobacco taxes leads to less tobacco use, and less tobacco use in particular among people of low income. So I guess that would be how
it
would
be.
Mr. Cummings, to the Drazkowski question.
Representative Drazkowski, you know, tobacco usage, it has the same exact same impact on higher-income people as it does at lower-income people. It just happens that it is when you are a tobacco user and use a lot of tobacco, it's a higher percentage of your income for lower-income people. But cancer doesn't discriminate.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cummings and Representative Freiberg. I mean, this is, you know, this is nanny state government at its best. I mean, you know, if you really want to save people, just ban it. I mean, that would be the answer instead of, you know, kind of painting around the edges with tax code. I mean, if people eat too many donuts, they're going to die.
Careful now. Chair Drazkowski, you have the floor. Not for much longer.
That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I resemble those remarks. No, Chair Drazkowski, I'm sorry. Okay, questions for members. Okay, we're very fortunate today to have a guest, a county commissioner from the Northeast, Chair Rukavina. So good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And a former esteemed member of this very committee. So with that, any other questions for members of the author? Thank you, Mr. Cummings. If not, would you like to wrap it up, please, sir?
I really appreciate the committee's time and consideration of this important measure.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. I will renew my motion to House File 2790 as amended. Be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, members, for your work today. Meeting tomorrow at 10:15 sharp a.m. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.